Your Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
See, pretty much all week and even this morning, I've got these people. So, is there's no show this Friday, right? Bye week, no show, right? No. We're doing it 52 weeks That's a year. Right. What?
52.
Hold on a second.
We're ready to go. I sound good?
There you go.
All right, here I am.
Well, try it again, Evan.
Check. Hello.
All right.
Yeah?
One
now
more time.
Now we're talking.
There we go.
Okay.
You sound a little off.
I think I sound off?
Yeah, you sound a little off the mic.
Oh, no.
Try now.
Hello.
There we go.
Ooh, that's the one.
There
right
we
there.
Go. It's all these
right,
buttons.
There we go.
Okay.
All right, we're good.
All right.
Yeah, we got a show. 52
See?
Weeks. That's right. We're settling it. We're settling it. What are we, at week 7 right now?
It is.
It is. It's week 7.
This would be week. Yeah, well, it is week 7. Would be game 7 for the Irish if they were playing. But my point is, we're going to have to get a new open cut, I guess, as well, because at some point we won't be opening up the football weekend.
No.
But it's still a football weekend, even if Notre Dame isn't playing this weekend.
Yeah, lots of football.
Yeah.
The guys get a little bit of a break now.
Absolutely. And that's a good point. As a player, Evan, it's bye week. How much did you look forward to bye week as a player?
I didn't like it.
Really?
Yeah, and I think you'd probably get a mixed bag response with guys, too. I like to stay in kind of in that routine, and I think that coaches try to best they can continue with whatever routine they have that is a game week, but still keep in mind that they have to get some guys some rest mentally and physically. Yeah, it's great. I mean, you get a little bit of time off. The practices aren't going to be as taxing in terms of development. You know, when I was a younger player, when I was a freshman, when I was a sophomore, I looked forward to it because I was getting a little more valued reps. It was a time for a little more development. Maybe some guys that were on the scout team that weren't getting, reps with what you call the first team or extended amount of time in the actual, Notre Dame playbook, offense and defense. Instead of running an opponent's offense on a scout team, you're able to run your actual offense, which was nice and refreshing. But I think where this is situated for this current Notre Dame team, I think it comes at a great time. You talk about kind of closing the book on the first half of the season, finishing strong. Really, there haven't been a lot of injuries, which has been a huge positive. But at the same time, it's a long season. For some of the younger guys and even guys that have been in the program, those hits add up over the course of the year. And if you're looking at, as an Irish fan, if you're looking at the second half of the season, it's a tough second half schedule. It really is. So I think that this is set up nice. I don't think you're going to have to worry about coming out sluggish. I think having USC as the first game following the bye, it's a rivalry game. Mm-hmm. There's no love lost there. There's bad blood. So it's not going to be one of those where you worry about the slow start. If it was Wake Forest, the rivalry or the intensity might not be there. I think that's usually the worry coming out of the bye week. I don't think that's going to be the case. So it's set up nice. You get that mental and physical rest. You get some guys that are going to be able to get healthy, get in the treatment room with the trainers and work on that. And then you're going to have some younger guys getting some valuable experience.
Well, that's the Irish, as Brian Kelly was saying last week, and he knocked on wood a few times when he said it, that they've been very fortunate in that they haven't had the major injuries. I mean, look at North Carolina and the injuries that they've gone through, but Notre Dame hasn't had that. But at the same time, all these running backs have had an ankle at some point, whether it's Josh Adams, Dexter Williams, Tony Jones Jr. How important do you think that timing is when you talk about the fact that you're going to open up the second half of the season with USC, very important game?
Well, first off, I don't think it's a coincidence. The decrease in injuries over this year with a new strength staff. I think that they've done a great job. If you look probably over the past 5 years, I think that was one concern. You were seeing a lot of guys with some soft tissue injuries or non-contact issues, whether it was in practice or a game. And now you're seeing Notre Dame really surge in the third and the fourth quarter physically, and then also the number of injuries go down. The ankles happen, but I think you know, to be able to go into the bye week and, again, whether it's, you know, whether they're doing heat or compression or ice, it's going to be for really for that entire stable of backs, which now we've seen four backs. It comes at a good time. You know, it's nice to be able to kind of kick your feet up, after 5-6 games and now really refocus and make sure that your body's feeling 100%. That was what we saw a little bit last year with Josh Adams, was, you know, a little more of a dynamic second half of the season once, you know, he was able to rest a little bit.
Absolutely. We'll talk about the dynamic season that Josh Adams is having right now here in just a few minutes. Also still to come, Evan in his Chalk Talk today going to break down Ian Book a little bit. We'll talk about Ian Book's performance in his first career start last week in the win over North Carolina, and a lot of others. So we're going to hit some Major League Baseball playoffs. And Evan,
we were
talking a little bit before the show started here, and he was going deep into some baseball stats that I like
and
to hear.
And it's time for, I think computers are going to be calling balls and strikes pretty soon too.
You think so?
Yeah. Why not? I'd like it as a player. If there's a level of consistency, and I think that's what we've seen so far, is they've been consistently poor. The umpires have.
Yeah.
With balls and strikes.
That's a good point.
Both sides.
I know a lot of Indians fans are thinking that,
yeah,
from that Yankees series. A lot of Indians fans are not very happy about that. The only problem I have with computers calling balls and strikes is what happens when the computer system breaks down.
Yeah,
you've got to stick an umpire back there who hasn't been calling balls and strikes.
That's probably true. But, I mean, if the technology's there, and certainly there's no fail-safes with a human system right now, I think that your level of consistency would be a little higher if you can say, all right, here are the parameters of where the strike zone is. How can we make sure that we're not missing as many calls? Would be, I don't know if the system's going to be perfect. I think you're just trying to create a little more continuity. Instead of saying game to game, the strike zone might differ.
Yeah.
Now you know as a hitter and a pitcher going in, this is a ball, this is a strike. Because sometimes it changes.
No, that's right. I think everybody, who would like it? Would pitchers like it more? Would hitters like it more? I'm trying to think.
I think if I'm thinking from a hitting perspective, I would like to know as a pitcher. Well, it could go either way because you could get squeezed as a pitcher too.
Mm-hmm.
But once you know that the zone is expanded and on the opposite side, of course, as a pitcher, you're going to take advantage of that. But on the hitter, then you're responsible by your, you know, really probably by your second at bat to say,
yeah,
well, I might have to protect, a few inches outside on the plate. The reason why I don't like about that is the plate is set up there for a reason. You throw it over the plate, it should be a strike. If it's not over the plate, it's not a strike.
Shouldn't matter who's on the mound.
Right. Exactly.
Reputation shouldn't matter. Guy
throw that
plate
away.
Shouldn't matter. The whole thing. No, that's absolutely. And you know that. Because the human element, that figures in there. Greg Maddux, whoever it happens to be. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, he came in with a great reputation, so you know he was probably going to get a couple inches on either side.
Yep. Some would say even more than that sometimes. All right, so we're going to hit a little bit baseball in a little bit as well. And don't forget Leprechaun Lunch presented by Sharply Training. You can be a champion with Sharply Training. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234, or visit sharplytraining.com. You got a lot of... baseball guys coming in now with things kind of shifting inside here pretty soon.
We're kind of transitioning from the football side of things. We have a couple of events. We have a Prowler competition tonight if anybody wants to come do that before high school football. I know you're calling the Penn-Mishawaka game.
Yeah.
I got quite a few guys in that game tonight. But a little Prowler competition from 5 to 6. And then tomorrow for any high school football players, if moms or dads are listening to this right now, because certainly the high school football players probably aren't being listening right now unless they're on lunch break. We're having a little refresh and refocus as we move into the postseason. So tomorrow from 3 to 5, just a little bit of speed and agility. My wife's going to be there doing some balance, mobility, stability, making sure these guys are ready to go. Final push once sectional playoffs start. But yeah, it transitions. A lot of the baseball guys we're getting who played summer ball, maybe a little fall ball, they're starting some workouts with their high school programs. We're transitioning more into the strength and conditioning side where we can really push it. And we're seeing them, 4 to 5 times a week, some speed and agility, some movement-based training. And then the skill side will really pick up here shortly, whether it be, hitting, fielding, throwing, arm care, those things. So we're excited. We got a lot going on.
All right. A lot of good stuff. Again, visit sharplytraining.com or give them a call at 574-226-8234. Okay, so Notre Dame is off this weekend. The 6 remaining games beginning a week from tomorrow. USC, NC State, Wake Forest, they're at Miami, Notre Dame at home, at Stanford, Thanksgiving weekend. Rank those six games in the confidence, the most confidence you have that they'll win. So, right. Start with the most confident. Who are you most confident?
Wake Forest.
You're with Wake?
Yeah.
See, I've got Navy. And
they're
they're
5-0 right now.
I know, but I've been watching that inside the season with Navy football.
Okay.
Got to tell you, I'm not all that impressed.
They've got Memphis this week.
They do.
And that's over-under's at 71.
I heard Shea and Irving talking about it.
Okay, so you're going Navy. I'm going Wake Forest.
What scares me about Wake Forest, I mean, I think you can look at this both ways. They're still a pretty good defensive team.
Very good defensive team.
Mike Elko, and I think they're kind of using a lot of the same elements.
I wouldn't think there'd be too many changes.
Yeah.
They've had, Clawson's had great success with Elko, Bowling Green at Wake Forest. Yeah, I would think that they'd try to keep a lot of those moving parts the same.
Yep. Navy should have lost, by the way, to Air Force last week. They got a last-second touchdown pass by Zach Abey, the Navy quarterback, who is...
He's been running well, too.
Fourth in the nation.
Yeah.
In rushing right now.
870 yards, 9 TDs. Yeah,
he
okay.
fumbled a lot early. Again, this is what I picked up watching that inside Navy football on Showtime. Fumbled a lot early. He was in the doghouse early, but he's picked it up. They're running a little more shotgun this year, too, which is interesting. Yeah.
But still with the option.
Yeah, with option elements, but they're out of the shotgun a little bit more. It's an interesting wrinkle. Yeah.
I'm gonna stick with Wake Forest. I'm gonna go Navy. Then I'll have them second. Okay. So I think that Wake Navy, but Navy always is a scary game.
Yeah.
So, but I'll keep them number two.
Okay.
And then really, if we're looking at USC, NC State, Miami, and Stanford, I mean, where do you draw the line
on
these?
It's tough. I mean, that's why the schedule is.
Because right now Miami's playing really good football. It's been a while since they've lost. Their defense and kind of doing my homework on them. Their front seven is fast.
Mm-hmm.
They have three linebackers that returned from last year that were all freshmen that played. They're all sophomores now that started. And then if you look at Stanford, the Bryce Love train, I guess if you were, always a really good offensive line. USC. I think USC has more holes than people are maybe talking about, or maybe people are talking about. A couple of losses. NC State probably right now. NC State and Miami are the two teams that concern me the most.
I'm with you.
So I'm going to go with following. So if we're going in order of my confidence level, Wake Forest, Navy, then I'm going to say USC,
okay.
Stanford,
okay.
Miami, and NC State.
The only ones where we're off are the first two.
Okay.
I have Navy first, you have Wake Forest first, but the rest of them
I really like
have
gone NC State. I know people probably don't want to hear that, but what's nice, if you want to say what's nice, is you've got USC and NC State both at home.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of the bye week, so you should be healthy. You should be focused. You've got two marquee matchups, and if you're hungry and searching for national attention, you win those two football games, you got it.
NC State has the really good rushing defense.
Yes, awesome up front.
And that's obviously what's going to have to concern Notre Dame, considering
and
how much they run.
I think, too, coming off of playing USC, Notre Dame's finally going to face a pure passer in Sam Darnold. Haven't really seen that yet. I don't think Michigan State wanted Brian Lewerke to throw the ball 40 times. I think at the juncture of the season, even with Georgia, and Georgia did win, Frum wasn't really the guy that was going to beat you. Mm-hmm. He's developed as the season has gone on. He's a young quarterback. But Darnold's going to be really the first guy that says, hey, give me the ball 40 or 50 times, and I'm going to try to beat you, because he has that talent.
Yeah, he'll hit some shots downfield. The question is going to be, what kind of mistakes can you make him make? The pressure up front, their offensive line is suspect.
Some injuries, too. Yeah,
they had some injuries. Suspect up there. The 9 turnovers that he has, he's fumbled the ball a few times as well. Can they make him make mistakes, get pressure on him, capitalize?
That's going to be the key. And then if we're looking at the NC State quarterback, he's one of the most efficient. Finley is one of the most efficient in the nation. It was last year, too, even leading up to the game in the hurricane conditions where he didn't play as much. But he really, they pride themselves in getting the ball out quick. and moving up and down the field. And they've done that so far this year. And I think, too, of any team, they probably, on the schedule, are probably the most complete team where the offense really works with their defense.
Let me hit you with this one now. Since you gave me your confidence order, we've got our confidence order just about the same. Over, under, 4.5 wins for the Irish out of these remaining six games.
4.5 wins. Okay. Well, I'm going to say Wake Forest and Navy are wins.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to the season, I picked losses to USC and Stanford, so I'd be at 4.
Okay.
But I'm very close right now to switching. I like the USC matchup the more and more I see it. I don't like NC State, and I don't like Miami. So I'm going to say win USC, loss NC State. Win Wake Forest, loss Miami, win Navy, win Stanford.
All right. So you're basically just swapping out your losses as the season's gone.
I had 9-3 to start the season. And really where I've been sitting has been, if this offense can score 30 a game, I thought they'd win 10. And they're on track for that.
Right.
I think that the NC State game for me is going to be a big one. If they can move the football on NC State up front, they have an opportunity to win 10-plus games.
Yeah. And that's – I'm going over. I'm gonna stick there. I say either NC State or Miami. Those are the two big ones right there. But it, just like you, I'm more confident in USC just watching what USC has been mm-hmm. this year. Stanford, even though they've got Bryce Love and they're running the ball exceptionally well, that's obviously going to be a challenge. Their defense has not – quite been up to snuff the way it has, not as physical as they've been.
I thought too, and there was a lot of buzz from Stanford's end through the spring and then into the fall that this defense was going to be more improved than last year, even though they lost a few key cogs in
mm-hmm.
In their group. But no, it hasn't been the same. They have a couple of losses. One real surprising loss to San Diego State, I believe, early in the season.
Yep.
You know, just kind of a head scratcher. You usually don't see that from Stanford. But, you know, of course, you get them at the end of the season. I'm sure they're going to be looking to play spoiler potentially.
Yep.
And who knows? You know, with USC and having played USC a number of times, you throw out the records. It really didn't matter, and it won't matter in this case. They're going to come to play. It's going to be a good game.
Yeah. All right. It is 12:17. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM. WSBT will be doing more in depth on USC next week, of course, when the Fighting Irish get set to host the Trojans. How about the season Josh Adams is having? He ranks sixth in the FBS with 776 rushing yards. He has six runs of 59-plus yards this season.
I think that's the most impressive stat right there.
It's amazing because then when you look from 2002 to 2014, Notre Dame as a team had 8 such runs.
So we're talking about like Darius Walker would be in there. Theo Riddick,
mm-hmm.
Sierre Wood, CJ Procise would be in there too. Yeah, that's amazing. So 8 total from 2002 to 2014, and he has 6 by himself. Wow.
And then of course Adams had one a couple years ago, but that's not included in this. But still, it's amazing. Leads the FBS in rush yards after contact per attempt at 6.8. Despite all that he's done, and we've seen so many great things from him this year, he's not getting a lot of national attention. Mm-mm. USA Today put out its list of top 6 running backs in the country. Here's their top, and they listed him, or actually their top 10. They listed him 6th. Here's their top 5. Bryce Love from Stanford, Saquon Barkley of Penn State, Rashad Penny of San Diego State, Miles Gaskin of Washington, and Nick Chubb of Georgia, and then they have Josh Adams 6th after them. Why do you think that he's not getting more national?
I don't know.
Plays?
I mean, I've seen, you know, quite a bit of Love and Barkley and Chubb, not as much of Penny and Gaskin. You know, he's still 6th. He's still a top 10 back based on this ranking. I don't really know why. I think it'd be easy to swap him out for Penny or Gaskin pretty easily. And, you know, Love is obviously run away with just, I mean, his yards right now. I mean, he's averaging 10.5 a carry,
mm-hmm.
which is How often do you see that halfway through the season? And granted, you know, you're seeing some of those same numbers right now from Adams too.
Well, that's another thing. There was another article, I think it was on Bleacher Report or something like that. This guy was a lot of different stuff about Bryce Love. And I mean, and it's impressive. He's got 1,240 yards. Now, you throw in the fact that Josh Adams has basically missed two games this season. He's missed eight quarters of play, either because they sat him due to his ankle or just because they didn't, and a combination of the fact they didn't have to have him in there because of the score of the game. Some other guys had opportunities, but he's basically missed two games this season.
It's a lot of time.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, when you look at the yards that he would have, he would be right there with Bryce Love. They're both on pace right now to set the single season yards per carry national record, which is eight something. They would both be on pace. And that's what I was getting to. This other article broke down all this great stuff about Love, including the fact that he's on pace to set this yards per carry national record. But, oh, by the way, Josh Adams, who is only a yard and a half per carry behind him, is also on pace to do the same thing. And they didn't mention Josh Adams.
They didn't mention him?
No.
I mean, well, like I said, if you look at the second half of the schedule, if certain players and then collectively as a team are looking for validation, are looking for some more national attention, it's going to happen. You win these next two football games and Adams rushes for 100 yards, if they aren't talking about him, then there's certainly an issue.
And that's what I think Darren and I were talking about it last week. When you look at the fact that they have USC coming up in primetime, I mean, that's the opportunity right there. You have a big game against USC in primetime. People are going to be talking about you.
I mean, I still don't know why he's not right now. He certainly deserves it. I don't think that there's a reason you would say you can point to and say he's not getting the attention for this reason. I don't know. It really is a head scratcher. I mean, if you look at what he's done, it's pretty impressive.
Barkley, who is ahead of him, 13th in rushing. Chubb, 16th. Gaskin, 19th. And again, right now, Adams is fifth in the nation with 776 yards, five touchdowns, 9 yards per carry, which ranks second behind Bryce Love. Do you think that how good Notre Dame's offensive line is could factor into this?
Stanford has a great offensive line too.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what they're known for, is dominating at the line of scrimmage. It shouldn't. I don't think that would be I wouldn't buy that as an argument of his talent.
And I'm not saying it should either. I'm just throwing it out there. Like, why? Because there really is very little talk about Josh Adams nationally right now.
I can't find a reason why he shouldn't be talked about more.
Yeah.
I've searched and searched and searched, and I don't know why. And I don't know if it matters. Does it matter? I guess would be the. Does it matter right now, halfway through the season, if he's getting a lot of talk? Probably not.
They're 5-1, having a great year. Yeah. Ultimately, all that matters is what's the team going to do at the end of the year.
No,
right?
I agree with that. But you still want to be recognized for having a good season. I mean, he's leapfrogged several guys on the all-time list. If he continues the trend that he's on, he's going to be. I mean, he's gonna push for top five. In the game against Miami of Ohio, I think everyone wanted to see him run for 600 yards. So, you know, you look at the collective part of, okay, they're 5-1. That's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see individual success. You want to have that recognition. But really, you know, I don't think it's a huge deal. I think, you know, when we're looking at it, and most Irish fans too, hey, he's my guy. You know, why is it number 33 getting a little more love from the national media? I don't know. I can't give you a good reason.
But again, there are a lot more prime time. Even Stanford, going to be a prime time game.
Miami's going to be an opportunity.
So there are going to be plenty of chances. He just has to go out, and maybe that's the knock, because he was bottled up against Georgia, didn't do anything against Georgia, and that
he's had success against the teams he should have success against. And I think that you do it against a team in prime time, you do it against a national power, that's going to hold a lot of clout.
Right. It is coming up on 12:20. 5 on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, South Bend. Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch. I want to be sure that we have time to talk some baseball at the end of the show because, like I said, Evan was spitting his game in here with some really good stuff about Aaron Judge and some other stuff before we started the show. And we were planning on talking a little about the playoffs and the Cubs game last night and everything as the Cubs head into their third straight NLCS. So I want to save time for that. So we're going to take a timeout right now, come back. We're going to hit Ian Book. Evan's going to do his chalk talk on Book and a couple plays from last week's game against North Carolina. It's 12:45, Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on WSBT.
You're a little excited about
Marky Mark the Marky right there, Mark, the Funky Bunch. All right.
Every day going to that smile on
every
his face.
Day, every That's morning right. with that.
Come on, swing it, baby. All right, it is the Leprechaun
Have you
lunch.
Seen that music video?
Oh, man, that is old school.
I think we need to do a remake here for the Sean and Sharp show. Wouldn't that be funny?
I don't know who I get to be in that, but... You get to be Marky Mark, that's for sure.
Yeah. Hey, you excited for the game tonight?
Yeah, it should be hopefully a good one. I mean, you just never know.
Yeah.
But I am. I'm it's NIC championship on the line. It's going to be a lot of fun out there. And a lot of stuff. Dean Huppert was talking yesterday on Caveman Corner. They're bringing out a portable
That's cool.
like, Jumbotron video screen yeah. thing tonight. And I know they're working toward getting a permanent one over there. And I think this is kind of the first step in that to kind of show exactly what it can do.
Well, with Mishawaka running the wing T, I don't have too many of their quarterbacks coming over and hanging out with me. But Ryan Lynch and Ronnie Paulus over at Penn, and then Jackson Weston is a defensive back, and Ryan Whiteman, the running back, too. So
yeah,
should be a great game.
Lynch, the lefty.
Yeah.
I was looking at some
Notre Dame commit for baseball.
Day. Is he?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he freshman. Well, sorry, committed following his freshman year, so sophomore now. Had a great season last year, baseball-wise, too. And, yeah, from the left side, you can throw it a little bit.
I can imagine.
Mid to upper 80s, touch 90.
There, I mean, it's hard to beat.
Yeah.
You got me speechless. I didn't realize. Well,
now you got something to talk about tonight, too, huh? Yeah,
that's right.
All right, there we go.
Talk about Ian Book and his performance last week real quick. Here's Brian Kelly, some of his thoughts after last Saturday's game.
Well, he's a very confident kid. There was no jitters, you know, with him. I mean, I think he overthrew a couple of balls here and there. But for a first start, I was really pleased with what he did today. You know, to win on the road is hard to do. And, you know, the ideal situation is to, you know, to start at home, you know, and in a more comfortable environment. But I thought he went in and did some really good things for us today.
So there you go, Brian Kelly talking about Ian Book last week. I mean, he had a good game. It wasn't a great game. It was a good game, 17 of 31, 146 yards, a touchdown pass, couple interceptions. He also ran 12 times for 45 yards, averaged 3.8 per carry. The big thing was, could he come in, run the offense, and not miss too much of a beat? And pick up a win, and he was able to do that.
I thought he looked confident, like Kelly said. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't have the deer in the headlights look. He went out there. He competed. I really liked his decisiveness early in the game, was letting the ball go when it was time to make a decision. You know, there wasn't a lot of hesitation. He was letting it rip. I think that, you know, looking back on film, you know, the two picks, he's going to want those throws back.
Yeah.
I think that that probably came with a little bit of inexperience, and that's something that he's going to learn from. But overall, I think close to what I expected. I thought he was going to complete a little bit higher percentage of his passes. But right about where I thought as far as the runs, you know, I didn't think it was going to be as high as Winbush, where you're getting closer to 20. Didn't think it was going to be 100-plus yards rushing, but, you know, he was fairly efficient, around 4 yards a carry. And, you know, I think that what you're seeing was it was a good opportunity for him in a setting where it never really felt like the game was going to be close.
Mm-hmm.
It was in control. And you also didn't feel like when he was in the game, when he was playing, that it was a huge step down. You know, certainly we discussed this last week, different traits, different things as part of the offense, but I think that, and I had actually said this, I didn't figure on Brandon Winbush getting hurt. I thought Ian Book was going to be, following, you know, a couple of years of Brandon Winbush at the helm, that Ian was going to be the next in line to start, aside from whoever was coming in after him. He kind of sped that up a little bit. But, you know, he's going to be a guy I think he really will I think he'll really resonate with Chip Long, the offense and the identity that he's creating. And I think he can be very efficient within the offense.
Chalk talk time. Now, you said you thought that he'd like to have the two interceptions back. So Evan's going to break them down. It is chalk talk. The first one came with about 4:17 to play in the second quarter. Notre Dame is backed up inside its own five. It's second and eight.
So first off, I like the play call. Hard play action. Mm-hmm. What you're seeing here is North Carolina has nine in the box. They're low in the box. They're going to say, you're going to have to beat us throwing the football, or it's going to be one of those series where we're going to run for a yard or two and then punt. I liked being aggressive down the field. Now, what was tough was it was only a two-man route. And you have very limited options when that's the case. And really, the safety, Miles Dorn, played it very well. He had both interceptions. What I saw in this was the safety's playing free, so it's man coverage between. There was a tight end route, and then a receiver running free as well, and Chris Fink. The safety kind of played on the hash and middled the throw. So when I watched it and I rewatched it, like, you know, who should this ball really have gone to? I felt like if he would have thrown to the tight end, Dorn would have been able to made a play on that, potentially pick it off as well. He throws it to Fink. You know, obviously we saw what happened. At that stage, it's probably going to be a throwaway, and that's something that is going to come with some time. He wanted to try to make a play. It just wasn't there.
Yeah.
So kudos really to Dorn. I thought, like I said, I thought he played it great. You've got man coverage. You've got a safety playing free so he can roam and go wherever he wants. If there's one thing that Book could have done better if he wanted to fit that ball, was move the safety with his eyes. So instead of staring Fink down, it would be, let's move my eyes to the middle of the field.
Middle to left.
Let's look at the tight end for, you know, a half a second. But just my eyes going there, it's going to force the safety to at least stop. Because really what Dorn was doing was just floating back. Because it was two verticals is what it was. And if he would have done that, or vice versa, if he looks outside, now you've got the middle of the field open because the safety has vacated his spot, you might be able to hit the tight end. So it just would be a little bit better job of moving the safety with his eyes.
And that's something in Book's defense that DeShone Kizer is even still working on right now. Watching some of the preseason games, I haven't got to see as much of him in the regular season, but we obviously saw him the last couple of years in the preseason. Yeah, I mean, that was the one thing that some of the Cleveland media was kind of picking on DeShone about, was his idea of looking off the safety is just a pump fake.
You know, that doesn't always work.
Where, like, he's staring the guy down still a little bit more.
Eyes are huge.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what safeties are taught to play. They're taught to play. If they're looking in the backfield and they're watching the quarterback's eyes, it's where is his head turned.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do yourself a lot of favors if you can move even a couple of yards. Because really, that's what that was. If he wanted to fit that ball in, it'd be moving the safety a few yards to the safety's right or to Book's left there to create a little bit more of a window. Those guys in the secondary, there's makeup speed. That might have been a throw that he could get away with in high school. Doesn't happen now.
Bailed out because of the fact that the defense played so well, because they gave North Carolina the ball in plus territory. But yeah, I mean, again, we're not even talking about the defense that much. We're nitpicking quarterbacks, but I mean, they have played
Mike Elko
so great all year.
Big time hire. Clark Lea, great addition. Elston's doing a great job coaching up the defensive line. I mean, I don't know what position group to look at and say what's been the biggest surprise. They've all made big changes. But we'll see here in the second half, though, too.
Defensive line, safeties, got to be your two biggest choices.
Yeah, I would think top two. Yeah.
But I think the way the defensive line has performed at a high level.
Consistency has been, and that was the thing last year, is there were games where certain players would play well, but it was never a collective group. And you're seeing that as from all front four and guys that are rotating in too. You know, Trombetti's a good example of someone who, when he's in the game, he's producing, he's playing well. He's not playing all the time. He's not an every down guy. You could say Akwara is another one, you know, coming into the speed package. When these guys are in,
great interception.
Yeah, I mean, they're taking advantage of their opportunities because you know you have a new mentality these guys are buying into.
You can argue that the play of the defensive line as disruptive as they've been has really helped out the back
huge,
end as well.
Huge. And that, you know, if you look over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, there are some good players in the secondary, but they're left on an island a lot of times because there was either no pressure. No, we're not just talking sacks. We're talking quarterback hurries, you know, throwaways, those things. When you speed up the quarterback's read, which that's a great segue into our next interception, it changes the dynamic of the throw and the timing of the route.
It absolutely does. And the second one now, you know, it's wrecking the red zone numbers is what it's doing.
Huge bummer.
That's right. Comes in the red zone in the third quarter. It's first and 10 at the North Carolina 18-yard line, and Notre Dame had just got a break. There was a penalty on North Carolina. So now you're moving the ball, you're running it well, and take us through what happens.
Yeah,
next.
So we've got cover two, 7 men in the box right now. So your 4 down linemen, your 3 linebackers, 2 deep safeties. Your corners are going to be in the flats. They have flat coverage. The middle of the field is open in this look right here. It's just a 4-man rush, but it's a blitz zone. So what they do is they bring pressure to the right side and then drop the left end. And I believe one other backer as well. So, you know, as a quarterback, you're feeling the pressure to the right of the formation, and the weak side then is dropping into coverage. And what happened is, whether it wasn't communicated early enough at the line of scrimmage, you have a free rusher coming in, and that pressure forced an early throw. And you could see Book really wasn't settled. He knew who he wanted to throw to. He threw early, and Smythe was not out of his break yet. The throw was high, sailed, was an interception again by the safety, Dorn. It's one of those things that if you put it right on him and he turns, you might stick it to his chest because it was going to the right player. I think leverage was difficult to read because of the blitz zone. He wasn't sure if it was going to be a turn in or turn out from the tight end. It ended up being a turn in based on the leverage from the blitz zone or the drop of the blitz zone being on the outside. And again, that's going to be something that comes with time, but you want it to be a different level throw. And one other thing too is there were a couple of hands at the line of scrimmage, and we've talked about, you know, Book's height, you know, 6 feet tall. It's you have to find windows when you're 6 feet tall and you're not 6'4". I didn't think he found a great window, but the pressure certainly dictated him throwing the ball when he did. He wasn't able to step into it and really finish, and that was why it went high.
That blitz zone, for a young quarterback especially, I imagine that's got to be...
Well, I think the frustrating part is you should be picked up because it's only a 4-man rush.
Okay.
So whether that's on him not seeing... like a false flag of pressure of here's where the pressure's probably coming from. And really, and I had a great conversation with, you know, former offensive lineman Ryan Harris, who was at Notre Dame and played with the Broncos. He said that Peyton Manning would always say, find the liar. There's always a liar on the defense. So whether you're using a double cadence, and I don't believe they use a double cadence on that, and a double cadence would be you're using a dummy snap. You could say, said Hutt, right? And then you see if there's any safety rotation. I don't think they did that. Usually you don't do it on the road. But if you're looking at the alignment there, you knew pressure wasn't coming weak. It was coming strong. So that needed to be communicated at the line of scrimmage before the snap.
Are some of these things, because again, it's easy to beat up on Brandon Wimbush because he doesn't have a great completion percentage himself right now. We've been through the whole thing. But some of the stuff that we're talking about right now, is it some stuff that maybe gets kind of taken for granted that Wimbush is doing well? Because he, through the 5 games that he's played, he's only thrown 2 interceptions himself.
Yeah, and that's, you know, there's a difference between getting it right in the classroom, you know, drawing it up on a board with X's and O's, seeing it on film and saying, hey, yeah, I've got a bird's eye view. I know that the safety is rotated this way. I know that I can expect pressure here. It's different when you're seeing it on the field. For Ian Book, this was really your first meaningful reps. You know, he had played some. He had performed well in the spring game. We'd seen him in the fall. It's completely different, and it's easy to miss those things. And that's something that's going to come with time. That's going to come with reps. That's going to come with playing more on the field. I'm sure, you know, Notre Dame won. He's going to be probably his harshest critic, but Tommy Reese now in the quarterback room can say, all right, you know, that's something. Here's where we take the next steps. Here's where the growth occurs. You made a mistake. I don't think it was a poor read. I think he could have done a better job at the line of scrimmage getting into a protection that would say, I am now picked up. I can stand in the pocket and make this throw.
Okay.
That's the next step of the progression of whether it's a slide to the left, because in this case, because it was a blitz zone, you have to change maybe the identification of the middle linebacker, which you would move him strong. You would say, okay, it's the guy who's going to be over here to my right. He is now the backer that we're blocking towards, because I know that you liars over there are not, you're not rushing. You're going to drop into coverage, and I know it because of what the safety to the strong side says.
But again, that stuff comes with experience.
Especially on field. Mm-hmm. Especially on field. There's one thing to see it in practice. It's totally different in the game. You kind of, is he, and of course the play clock's counting down. You know, oh, we're at 10, 9, right? I got to get this play. I got to call this play. I got to go through my initial pre-snap read. Okay, where am I? Oh, the clock's at 10 now. Okay, I got to get into my cadence. It's faster. Yeah. It's different, and the game slows down with more experience.
It is 12:43. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of baseball. Cubs beat the Nationals last night, game 5 of the division series, to move to their third straight NLCS. We'll talk about that. We'll talk a little of the ALCS that's starting. Aaron Judge, you've got some great stuff on that, and we will do that coming up next when the Leprechaun Lunch continues with Sean and Sherpley on WSBT. We continue coming up on 12:47 on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT. Sean and Sherpley and the Leprechaun Lunch, of course, the Cubs.
Whew. Oh, man.
Another late night game last night.
Well, 4 hours and 45 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Get great, that computer, I mean, set up right now.
Well played game. There were a few little things that kind of went either way, and I know the Nationals have to be sitting there feeling like all the calls went the other way. Last night there was the John Jay slide at second base where, I mean, to me, I looked at it, and I guess if you really wanted to, yeah, you could say that because of the way his legs came to the inside part of the bag and didn't necessarily take out Murphy, but they got into
You're not allowed to take... I know.
Well, see, and that's the thing. The other part of the rule is you can't just slide through the bag. At the very minimum, your hand has to stay in contact with the bag, and he did that. It wasn't so egregious that he just wiped out through the bag and took him out.
And if you have long arms, I mean, you can create a pretty nice span there. That was always my approach.
To me, it was a good baseball play. I mean, he broke up a double play. He didn't try to kill a guy at second base. It was just
There's a difference between going spikes up and, you know, and really trying to do some harm to someone.
Exactly.
And just playing, I mean, what I would say is playing baseball.
And that's what it was to me. And then
is this our targeting call for Major League Baseball? Is this the same? We don't know.
You know, they've changed the replay has changed the game. You were talking earlier in the show about how you want balls and strikes called at the plate now with computers and the whole thing, and technology has changed the game. But because we have those replays now, I mean, so right now we're critiquing how John Jay slides into the bag, but on a lot of these plays that we've seen where guys, whether it's a stolen base or whatever it happens to be, because of the way you have to slide into the bag, you can overslide a little bit, and if you, just like the pickoff play at first, if you come a milliliter or millimeter off the bag and instant replay sees it,
you're done for.
Now you're out. Yeah, so there are a lot of ways that it's affected, not just whether or not you're taking out a guy at second base.
Yeah, I mean, it's do you want to get it right, I guess, is really what you're looking at. And then the other question would be, the game is already long, so if you're going to the replay booth multiple times, does that lengthen it up? But could computerized balls and strikes, could that speed the game up? I don't know. I don't know if it's a perfect system either way, but I think that that's where it's moving.
I don't think there ever will be. Wade Davis with a 7-out save last night. First that, one of anything close in his career.
I'll tell you what, that last slider in to Harper. I don't know if Harper sees that 100 times if he touches it. He might. But, you know, after how the series had gone with very few runs, the way that it finished, kind of this strange back and forth game, you could look at the non-call strike three catcher's interference, non-call, and how that affected the game. But for it to finish with a Wade Davis versus Bryce Harper matchup, like, that's...
It's pretty epic.
Yeah, right.
And here's Wade Davis, a guy who in his first season with the Cubs, but he was a World Series hero in Kansas City for a couple years, a big part of their run. And I mean, it shows that even a year later, that you essentially swap Aroldis Chapman for Wade Davis. And a year later now, everyone critiqued and criticized Joe Maddon for how he used Aroldis Chapman. But it shows what he thinks about the rest of his bullpen. Yeah. That in a game like this now, in it, the night after Wade Davis gave up a grand slam to Michael Taylor, who, I mean, had four more RBIs last night, by the way. But he goes right back to Wade Davis in the seventh inning to get the last seven outs. I don't know if Wade Davis can keep that up if he's put in those situations, NLCS.
We'll see.
But he did it last night anyway. But, I mean, that Cubs bullpen is still an issue in those high-leverage, big-time game-deciding situations.
But I love these matchups, though. Houston, New York, I really
like. Oh, I know.
Yeah, I mean, then obviously now with L.A. and the Cubs, once again, it's good baseball here right now in the fall.
Absolutely.
So I love it.
In the NLCS, you've got, of course, the Cubs and Dodgers. That'll start tomorrow. Right. ALCS starts tonight. Astros and
Yankees.
Yeah.
Well, so
blank there for a second. Oh, yeah, that team, the Yankees.
Yeah, they're hot right now.
Absolutely.
How about that?
Hot. What do you think about we're talking about strike zone. I know a lot of Cleveland fans were upset with the high strikes that were being called in those last couple of games, especially the other night. I mean, at some point as a hitter, and again, for people who don't remember, Evan didn't just play quarterback for Notre Dame. He was also on the Notre Dame baseball team, played professionally in the Seattle Mariners organization as a hitter. I mean, at some point by the middle of the game, second, third time through the order, you've got to adjust to that, right?
Yeah, it's frustrating because you're getting outside of your comfort zone. You're getting outside of your approach. But, you know, when you're playing especially in a high-level game like this, at some point you have to say, I don't want the umpire to make this call on me once again. I mean, you've seen multiple batters where it's been called, and pitchers are then, once they know, they're going to take advantage of that. Yeah, certainly you have to make some adjustments, and you know, I think that a lot of times when you lose, it's, you know, it becomes a little more. I think you talk about it a little bit more, but you know, it's been inconsistently. Consistent? Is that how it's said? Inconsistently consistent throughout the playoffs.
But it goes to your point about technology and calling balls and strikes. The other thing, though, in any team's defense, when you've got relief pitchers, and that's what the Yankees have, is that bullpen, all these guys who can throw high 90s.
Yeah,
and
you're going to elevate 100. You're going to elevate fastballs.
I mean, it's hard to adjust to high fastballs out of the strike zone as a hitter.
So,
right?
Sean, right now there's a push for, and this isn't something new. This is, it's kind of a re-revolution of putting the ball into the air, okay? Mm-hmm. If you look back, my favorite guy in this is Ted Williams. He was teaching it 40, 50 years ago and saying the perfect swing is a slight upswing. So you have a ball that's being pitched off a mound. It's coming downhill towards you at about 6 degrees. A curveball is going to be on average at 12.
Mm-hmm.
So your goal should be to swing slightly up at about 6 degrees to try to match the plane of that ball, right? You're getting a lot of hitting instructors and coaches saying it's down and through the ball. No, it is not. It is a slight upswing. So what pitchers are doing now, because there's been, and whether or not the ball is juiced, which, you know, there's rumors of that with the number of home runs this year, you're seeing more hitters try to elevate the ball. So when you turn on a game and you see exit velocity and you see launch angle, those are two really important things, but you're seeing more hitters work on trying to put the ball in the air. So, you know, you've got guys like Aaron Judge. The Houston Astros, they use the same sensor that I have at my facility, the blast motion. They track everything, how hard guys are swinging and how high they're swinging up. So you don't want to swing straight up into the air and hit a lazy fly ball. You're trying to hit laser line drives. And that's the push for right now. But the hardest pitch to hit, because you're working against gravity, is an elevated fastball at 95 plus. Listen, the pitchers are getting better too. They're throwing harder and they're tunneling their pitches, which means that all of their pitches, all of their arm action look the same, but you got a pitch that goes to the right, a pitch that goes to the left, a pitch that stays high, and then one that breaks off the table.
Real quick, we were talking about Aaron Judge and all the strikeouts that he had in the division series, 15 strikeouts in 20 plate appearances, I think it was. Yep. Everyone's been talking about Tony Gwynn only struck out 15 times. Give me in a minute or less, give us some juice on that comparison.
So first off, this comparison was from 95 when Gwynn's in his 14th season. He batted nearly 370 that year. Aaron Judge is in his first full season right now. But if you're looking at really the meaningful stats, on-base percentage, Judge is higher. His slugging and OPS were higher in this season. The only categories, if we're really looking at a lot of the categories that matter, that Gwynn was better at was hits. He had 197. Judge was at 154, so not that far off. And the big stat that was surprising to me was you had 15 strikeouts for Gwynn. He had 35 walks for that season. Judge quadrupled that. Yes, he struck out 207 times, but his on-base percentage is higher, even though he only batted 281. So throw out batting average. Who cares?
Which is what all the old school people are still hung
up on. Exactly, right? So throw out that, and also say it does. Stop counting your hits. Make the hits count, and that's what you're seeing a lot of guys do. How many runs are you driving?
And that's essentially what analytics is. Forget about calling it Moneyball and all that.
In Gwynn's best season, he had 107 runs. In Aaron Judge's first full season right now, 128. You could say the same thing with RBI. Judge, 114 this year. And then in Gwynn's best season, we're talking about RBIs right now, 119. So just five more in his best overall. And Judge almost did it in his first full season.
Great stuff. You've earned more baseball next week. We've got to take a timeout right now. The Leprechaun Lutz with Sean and Sharpley on WSBT. All right, we've got about 30 seconds left. It's Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Sharpley Training, 574-226-8234, sharpleytraining.com. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I got one thing to talk about.
All right.
The NCAA dropped the ball again. What UNC, nothing? Come on. Seriously?
First we were waiting years, then it was going to happen last week, now it's nothing.
Nothing. Unbelievable. I don't know what to say.
Talk to you next week. WSBT South Bend.